Hello and welcome to the commentary for Lesson 307, Song of Songs, Chapters 7 and 8. So we got to finish a book today. I'm so excited, a book of the Bible. It feels like we haven't done that in a long time because, of course, Psalms and Proverbs lasted forever. And I'm not even sure that we ever really finished them. And we're going to get back into, after we, starting with our next lesson, we'll get back into some First Kings and then Ecclesiastes and kind of and some more Chronicles. So we'll kind of be skipping all over the place for the sake of keeping it in chronological order. So that'll be good to get back to some storyline and see what's coming next. But I love how this wrapped up, and there was a lot in here. I dug a little bit. I went to my study Bible this time, and in chapter 7, of course, it starts out with he is just, King Solomon, presumably, is just really taken by her body, and he's just describing it in great detail. And verse 4 is kind of curious because we don't know these places. He says, your neck is as beautiful as an ivory tower. Your eyes are like the sparkling pools in Heshbon. Now, Heshbon is an ancient capital of the Amorites. One could assume it's a beautiful place because it has sparkling pools, and it's something he uses to describe her eyes. It says, by the gate of Bath Rabbim. My study Bible says that may have been a gate, one of the gates or the main gate of Heshbon. So apparently a beautiful place. Verse 5 says, your head is as majestic as Mount Carmel. Not everybody wants their head compared to a mountain. However, Mount Carmel overlooks the Mediterranean Sea and Palestine. And my assumption is that it is a beautiful sight. If you've ever seen pictures of the cities overlooking the Mediterranean Sea, I mean, I hope I can go there someday. It is breathtakingly beautiful. So when you look a little further at what those places are, where those places are, and put it in perspective, it just goes with the rest of the flow of what he's saying about her. He just thinks everything about her is beautiful. Every inch of her body he thinks is beautiful. And, you know, a girl loves to hear that, right? We love to know that we want to know that we are cherished and loved for, of course, other things besides our body. But we are, when we are in a committed marriage relationship, it's wonderful to know he likes your physical aspects too. And of course, that's much more probable at the beginning of marriage. After children, of course, our bodies tend to go, and with age, our bodies and our looks tend to go. That's why I love later on. Well, I'll get to it later. I'll come back to that. But okay, then it switches to the young woman, and she's gushing about him, of course. She always seems to want to escape with him. She wants to go out into the wilderness and pop a squat under a tree or something. And she just loves being alone with him. She loves being in the wilderness among the flowers, in the fields, under trees. She is an outdoorsy girl. She loves nature. And verse 13 says, the mandrakes give off their fragrance. This is cool. It says, and the finest fruits are at our door. So I'm going to read something from my study Bible about this because it's just interesting to, you know, I like the details. So about, in regards to the mandrakes, it says they were somewhat rare plant, often thought to increase fertility. And what's cool is it refers you or the reader to Genesis 30, 14 through 17. And I remember this story, and this kind of supports the idea that this was thought to be increased fertility, because it makes sense in the context of this fruit. It adds more layers to a previous story that makes everything just make more sense. You remember when Jacob had... he was tricked and married Leah first, but he really loved Rachel. And the two sisters were competing to have more children and to earn his love. And they were very jealous of one another. Now, Rachel was the one that he truly loved. And but she was not able to bear children. So listen to this. It starts in, let's see, I'll start with verse 14. One day during the wheat harvest, Reuben found some mandrakes growing in a field and brought them home to his mother, Leah. Rachel begged Leah, "Please give me some fruit from your son's mandrakes." But Leah angrily replied, "Wasn't it enough that you stole my husband? Now you will steal my son's mandrakes too?" Rachel answered, "I will let Jacob sleep with you tonight if you give me some of the mandrakes." So that evening, as Jacob was coming home from the fields, Leah went out to meet him. "You must come and sleep with me tonight," she said. "I have paid for you with some mandrakes that my son found." So that night he slept with Leah. So yes, that was a pathetic move on Leah's part, that it's just pathetic that she needed to buy his affections for the evening. But it shows you how desperate Rachel was for mandrakes. And we know that she was barren at that time, and she was really, really wanting to conceive for Jacob. And so that just really puts the pieces together. That's what I love about when you're studying the Bible and you can connect the dots like that. It's exciting. But for this section, verses 10 through 13, as a whole, the young woman is talking about how much she loves spending time with him and how she wants to be in nature with him. I'm going to read from my study Bible, just because this was such a good point. It says, "As a marriage matures, love and freedom between marriage partners should increase. Here, the girl takes the initiative in lovemaking. Many cultures have stereotypes of the roles of men and women that men and women play in lovemaking, but the security of true love gives both marriage partners the freedom to initiate acts of love and express their true feelings." She is saying, "Come on, let's go. I want you. I want you now." Basically, that's what she's saying. And she cannot stand to be away from him. Chapter 8, verses 1 through 4. It is weird. I know the language is weird, and it kind of makes your skin crawl when she says, "Oh, I wish you were my brother who nursed at my mother's breasts. Then I could kiss you no matter who was watching, and no one would criticize me." I know that's kind of a sick and twisted line because you're thinking about her kissing her brother, but that's not the point. The point was, at that time, and even really still now, it was improper to show public affection, except between family members, right? We don't think anything of it if you go and you put your arm around your brother or sister, or you give someone a hug. But otherwise, it's just PDA, and it's annoying. It's in bad taste even now here. But especially back then, at that time, it was very frowned upon. And she had trouble keeping her hands off of him. And so she didn't care if they were in public. She wished so badly that she could throw her arms around him and kiss him, even in public. So, okay. Then we go down to young woman, verses 6 through 7. She says in verse 6, "Place me like a seal over your heart, like a seal on your arm." A seal, just to let you know, I think most people know this, but seals served as guarantees of protection, and I'm getting this from my study Bible. "An unbroken seal proved that the contents had not been tampered with." You know, when you buy something, like a bottle of wine, it has a wax at the top. I don't know if they still do, or even just has the twist cap that's got that connected seal to the bottom part. That shows that it hasn't been tampered with. Same thing. But whether a document, a door, or a wine jar, the seal also served as a mark of ownership or as a trademark. It was also used to validate documents. The seal was suspended by a cord about the neck or the wrist or attached to some part of the owner's clothing. So they kind of always had it handy. It was like their mark, their seal, right? Okay. So basically, she wants to be owned by him. She has saved herself for him. She And we'll talk about how she has saved herself for him. And only he could break that seal. Love that. Place a seal over your heart. Okay. This whole paragraph here, it's very intense. It talks a lot about love. I'm just going to read it real quickly. I aroused you under the apple tree where your mother gave you birth, where in great pain she delivered you. Place me like a seal over your heart, like a seal on your arm. For love is as strong as death. That's a big statement. Love is as strong as death. It's jealousy as enduring as the grave. Love flashes like fire, the brightest kind of flame. Many waters cannot quench love, nor can rivers drown it. If a man tried to buy love with all his wealth, his offer would be utterly scorned. So love is something to be highly prized, something that you feel strongly about, passionately about. That's why you get jealous of your lover. I'm going to read what it says in the study Bible about that. It was really good. In this final description of their love, the girl includes some of its significant characteristics. Love is as strong as death. It cannot be killed by time or disaster and cannot be bought for any price because it is freely given. Sounds like God's love for us. And salvation is freely given through God's grace, not of any works, so none of us can boast. Love is priceless, and even the richest king cannot buy it. Love must be accepted as a gift from God. It must be accepted and then shared within the guidelines God provides. Accept the love of your spouse as God's gift and strive to make your love a reflection of the perfect love that comes from God Himself. I love that. And then verses 8 through 9, you know, when it says, it kind of switches scenes here and it's a little confusing. It says the young woman's brothers are speaking. And we haven't heard from them yet. We've heard from the young woman of Jerusalem and the young man and the young woman, but this is new. So it's kind of curious. It says in verse 8, we have a little sister too young to have breasts. What will we do for our sister if someone asks to marry her? If she is a virgin like a wall, we will protect her with a silver tower. But if she is promiscuous like a swinging door, we will block her door with a cedar bar. So my study Bible suggests that she is remembering her youth here. And she is remembering, this verifies that she was a virgin before marriage. Because the very next line in verse 10 says, I was a virgin like a wall. Now my breasts are like towers. So yeah, they said, too little to have breasts, too young to have breasts. And here she's saying, I'm all grown up now. I have breasts, right? So that's tells us that she was remembering her youth. We also learn that she saved herself for marriage. And I like that it says that, you know, and we know this is true, that when a young woman has a lot of brothers, that they are protective of her. And that's what I see here. They saw that keeping her pure and keeping her virginity, that was a priority for her. They wanted that for her. And they were protective of her. And they would do everything in their power to make sure that she did not defile herself by being promiscuous. Okay. Verses 11 through 12. It says, Solomon has a vineyard at Baal Hamon, which he leases out to tenant farmers. Each of them pays 1,000 pieces of silver for harvesting its fruit. But my vineyard is mine to give, and Solomon need not pay 1,000 pieces of silver, but I will give 200 pieces to those who care for its vines. That seems sort of like an odd statement in the midst of this love poem to one another. And so you wonder, is this literal? Because if it's literal, that's kind of strange. Or is it a metaphor? It could be either. I'm not really sure, but I will read you what the study Bible says. It says, Solomon could demand rent from the tenants for his vineyard, but the girl had her own vineyard, and it was her right to assign it. But she willingly gave Solomon its fruit. In a good marriage, there is no private property, for everything is shared between the partners. This is the only time Baal-Hamon is mentioned in the Bible, and its location is unknown. So, it could be that it is literal and that it's just a symbol of how their relationship is. That he gives her something and expects nothing in return. And she's not saying, oh, good, this is mine and I'm going to get the money from this. I will get a tenant in there and I will get the money and this is what I'll do and it'll kind of be mine. She wants someone to harvest the fruits. She wants to share the fruits with Solomon. It's a mutual love and respect, a mutual give and take. There's, you see, yes, men and women are very different, but here you just see in a loving relationship, in a good marriage that God has blessed, how the give and take works. And they do everything as a team and sort of just in full respect and love for each other. And then again in verse 14, the last scripture of this says, come away, my love, be like a gazelle or a young stag on the mountains of spices. She loves to get away with him. I can read from my basic Bible pocket guide, which I haven't gotten to do for a long time, by Jim George. And it's a summary every time we finish a book of the Bible. So I like to do that. So let me begin with that. It says, the theme of Song of Solomon is obviously love and marriage. Chapter 2, verse 16 gives the main scripture, like if you picked one scripture out of it, it is my beloved is mine and I am his. Now I remember a little song when I was a kid. I am my beloved and he is mine. His banner over me is love. I think I even attached that as a link or something at one point. But it just reminds me, that makes me think that this could have significant meaning as it relates to how our committed marriages are actually reflections in a way of God's love for us. In other parts of the Bible, God refers to himself as our husband and us as his bride. So it's possible that all of Song of Solomon's was written for that purpose, although it's so detailed, you have to think this had to be a true love story. And I wonder sometimes if maybe it was a private diary that was not meant to be published. I don't know. Who knows? But the author is believed to be Solomon. And it says, Song of Solomon is about love and marriage. A youthful King Solomon is writing a wedding song to describe his love for and marriage to a beautiful country girl referred to as the Shulamite. This song records the dialogue between an ordinary Jewish maiden and her beloved, the King of Israel. Solomon's tender, poetic marriage song gives us God's perspective on love, sex, and marriage. This book of inspired poetry gives you a model of God's intentions for love and marriage. It celebrates the joy and intimacy that make up a romantic relationship between a husband and wife. Life application. Love is a powerful, God-given expression of feeling and commitment between two people. Love doesn't just look for outward physical beauty. It looks for the inner qualities that never fade with time: spiritual commitment, integrity, sensitivity, and sincerity. Therefore, such love is not to be regarded in a casual manner, and the physical expression of this kind of true love should be withheld until marriage. And after marriage, it is this genuine internal love that won't let any walls come between you and your spouse. God takes great joy in the passionate romantic love between a husband and wife. A couple should openly express their love and admiration for each other. A husband and wife honor God when they do that. Of course, marriage, with all its misunderstandings, is always a work in progress. So that summarizes it beautifully. God gave us marriage, and if you're like me, I screwed up the whole waiting for marriage part. But I know that he can redeem me even still, and that he loves me even still. And that was a beautiful message, but I'm excited to get on. I hope you all have a great day, and I will talk to you soon.